Understand that when a man and a wife work together, two is better than one. While one can accomplish a number of things when one has a helper, as God intended in the book of Genesis, then you're able to accomplish more. At least that's the way that it ought to be. We want to talk this morning about a man and a wife who work together to accomplish evil. And we understand that that certainly can be done. So I want to talk with you this morning from what the Old Testament has about what you're willing to sell, because sometimes people sell things. And is there something that you have that you say, I would never sell that? And it's something to think about as we consider this. Some say, well, that's not for sale at any price. And then, of course, somebody offers them that price. The truth is that we would sell most anything at the right price, even our homes and cars. If somebody offered us the right price, we'd at least consider selling those things, and likely would sell some very dear possessions. My wife and I used to go to antique stores a lot, and we found all kinds of things that we wanted to have. And she particularly liked the jewel tea pattern of dishes because her mother used those. Some of you know what in the world that is. But I'd sell those in a minute if they had the right price for them. So we just have to think about that. If the price is right, I'd sell those dishes. And we have to think about that. Well, the main question is, would you sell yourself? Would you sell yourself? In an immoral way, that's what many people do. Particularly when they're hooked on drugs, they will sell themselves to buy drugs. Would you sell out your principles? Have you ever realized how those principles have been tested? Because sometimes they are, and you have to hold on to those things. Would you sell yourself to someone else if the price is right? Remember a discussion Churchill had back when he was alive. He had a woman he didn't like. And they were having dinner together. He said, would you sleep with me for $1 million? And she thought about that and said, yeah. He said, would you sleep with me for $50? And she said, what do you think I am? He said, we've already established that, now we're trying to figure out your price. Needless to say, she didn't appreciate that very much. But people have a price sometimes they would sell things for. And we want to look today at King Ahab and his notorious wife Jezebel. You know, I've never known of a girl named Jezebel in our lifetime. She has such an evil reputation that nobody would do that. But we're introduced to King Ahab in 1 Kings chapter 16. If you'll turn in your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 16, we'll be there for a while and we'll look at different things as it has to do with King Ahab. In 1 Kings 16, in beginning of verse 29, in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, Ahab the son of Omri became king over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. Now you understand that the death of Solomon, the United Kingdom under David and Solomon, divided. There were 10 tribes to the north, which were called Israel, then 2 tribes to the south, which called themselves Judah. They were often in conflict with one another. And Israel, however, went quickly into idolatry under Jeroboam. And so this says that Ahab was doing that as well. And in verse 30, now Ahab the son of Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. Now that's saying a lot. Because Jeroboam had sort of set the pattern for idolatry. And this was Ahab. And his story is recorded in 1 Kings 16 through chapter 22. Of course, we'll not read all of that. But he sold himself to do wickedness. And he was ready to do whatever he wanted to do to please himself. And it's not often that we come in touch with somebody who's like that way, but if the price is right, that's what he's going to do. So in verse 25 of 1 Kings 21, there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do wickedness in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, stirred him up. So here we have a union where two can accomplish more than one, but they accomplish more wickedness because of Jezebel. And what it's saying is that he sold himself because she stirred him up. So I want to talk about selling yourself this morning and stirring one another up. Hebrew writer talks about stirring one another up to good works and to be edified with one another. And that's a good way that we can stir up one another. But Jezebel stirred him up to do wickedness. Ahab was sort of weak in a way. He was wicked. He set the nation toward idolatry and did a lot of wicked things. But he sort of pouted along the way, as we'll find out. And his wife sort of took over and encouraged him in that. So we're talking about selling and stirring this morning. Romans 15:4 said we learn from the Old Testament. And we certainly do in this situation, because I know we talked in class this morning about godly women and the vital importance to the family for godly women. But here's an ungodly woman, and she strengthened the wickedness of her husband. And it can be that way when people are doing things that are wrong together. Ahab sold himself to do evil, 1 Kings 20:20 and 25. And then Jezebel stirred him up in chapter 21 and verse 25. So they were a combination, but they had a wicked result in that. And we just think, you know, you and your wife or you and your friends in the church, we can stir one another up to good works. But here they sold themselves to do wickedness, and that was something that was wrong. And so the idea of selling yourself is into slavery, the practice of selling into slavery. And that was often what happened so far as the Old Testament is concerned. You remember the story of Joseph and how Joseph was sold into slavery. In a real sense, when one unites himself with the devil, you sold your soul to do wickedness. And, of course, there are consequences of that. But in the book of Romans chapter 7, the Apostle Paul talked about the idea of what wickedness does to us. He talked about the warfare that went on in himself. Beginning in verse 21 of Romans 7, I find then a law that evil is present with me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. So there is a law of sin, and it brings people into captivity. Romans 6 even talked about the one that you serve is your master. And you have to recognize that that's true today just as much as it was in the day of Paul. So the idea of selling yourself into slavery by doing the things that inside maybe you don't want to do. And Paul is discussing, I think, himself before he became a Christian, or he's talking about people who, before they become a Christian, they have a warfare going on. Most of us have felt that at some time of your life. You're tempted to do something wrong, and you know you shouldn't. But there's warfare that goes on in your spirit, because the desire to do it is strong. While you recognize and acknowledge that the law is good and I shouldn't do that, we fall into that temptation on different occasions, and that's what happens to us. And so he sold himself to do evil, and he viewed sin as a trivial thing. It didn't matter much. And people today, sometimes they divide sins into categories. We know of a black lie, we know of a white lie, but they're all lies. And we sometimes categorize those, and I've always thought that abortion is one of the worst sins anybody can practice. But lying is just as bad. I mean, from our viewpoint, we look at abortion as murder, and it's happening millions of times. In fact, I saw something yesterday that there have been more babies aborted than all the people of all the wars in America have ever fought. And that's ongoing even this morning, that people are getting abortions. And so he viewed some things as trivial, and no serious consequences in those kinds of things. And oftentimes that's the way people look at it. But in John 8 and in verse 21, Jesus had a comment to make about that. And he said in verse 21, I am going away, you will seek me and will die in your sin. Where I go, you cannot come. And so there are consequences to sin. And we have to recognize that that's the truth. There are consequences that we bring upon ourselves, and of course with the help of Satan. And he felt like there was no reason for shame, and that's what Ezekiel talked about in chapter 16. People get to the point where they don't care. In Galatians chapter 5, there are the works of the flesh. One of them begins with fornication and goes to adultery, and then the uncleanness. And there's a increase in seriousness as you go along in wickedness. Fornication might be a one-time act, and you'd be ashamed of that. But adultery is when you live in a situation. So you've gone to a higher level of wickedness when you live in adultery. But then that's between a man and a woman. But then uncleanness is the degree to which people are willing to go, and they don't feel any shame in that. And then the word lasciviousness, which is the next one, means you don't even care when people know about it. I've been so perturbed in just seeing the news. Our country has just descended into the pits in our lifetime. And all of you know the name of Stormy Daniels. And this is a woman who prides herself on being a prostitute. And she says, since she's had all the notoriety, that she's busier than she's ever been. Well, whoop-de-doo. Somebody proud of that kind of life? And yet, that's the way it is in America. I do believe that one of the reasons why we don't convert more people is that sin is so acceptable and so well thought of in our country today. You can live in any kind of sin that you want to and be accepted in today's society. It's amazing how people give up all their morals in those kinds of situations. And then so many times they laugh at those who say it's bad. And of course, Christians have been mocked in our lifetime because we don't do some things that other people do. But selling yourself you treat sin as trivial, you're easy to do it. You don't see anything important. You don't see anything major. And so it's just a little thing, and I'll go ahead and do it because it's not a big thing. And so we have mortal sins and venial sins in the Catholic Church. A venial sin is really bad, but a mortal sin is even worse. Well, who classifies those kinds of things? Who makes the decision that one is worse than another? And so he married a worldly woman. In 1 Kings chapter 16, we're introduced to Jezebel, and she was a wicked woman and an idolater. So here was a man who's supposed to believe in God, who connects with a wicked woman, and together they make that pattern and a partnership of evil that becomes even worse than it might have been otherwise. Jezebel was a pagan, an idol worshiper, particularly of Baal, and the Jews were forbidden to marry pagans. You go back to Exodus and Deuteronomy, and there are very strict rules about that because Israel was being groomed for the Messiah to come. And they had a hedge around them as a nation because they wanted to keep the blood pure until Jesus came. But they began to ignore that rule. So she brought a worldly influence into the marriage. How much better is it for a godly woman or a godly man to bring a godly influence into a marriage? You lift each other up. You put yourself on a higher plane. You begin to think about heaven and things of that nature. And it just builds you up to have that kind of relationship. But here's the opposite, where they had such a terrible influence. And you sell yourself when you marry a worldly person. People don't realize sometimes how important it is to have a good wife or a good husband. But they can either make you or break you. And sometimes when you have someone marry that turns out to be a worldly person, it contaminates the entire marriage and the children to come. And that's the thing that people don't think about sometimes when they get married, about the children to come and how that might influence generations yet unborn. Deuteronomy talks about that with regard to the Jewish people, that they were to influence the generations yet unborn with our understanding and keeping the law. And so he took on a religion like the world. And you know you can do that. If you look around, you can see a religion that's pretty much like a nightclub. They have the lights, they have the music, they have the atmosphere of a nightclub. And a lot of people are going to these mega churches because they supply a carnal need rather than a spiritual need. And you have to be thinking about these things before you make a decision. So if you're going to go to a religion or a church that's like a nightclub, why not just go to Las Vegas? Why not just do something like that, where at least you are honest with saying, I want to be worldly, I want to have that kind of fun, but go to a church that's like a carnival, and it sort of defeats the purpose, doesn't it? And so this is what we're looking at with regard to them. The world of Ahab's day worshipped idols. He took on their religious practices and became no different than the world. How many people have we lost to the world because, like Demas, they loved the present world? Demas was a companion of Paul, but he loved the present world so much that he couldn't take it in preaching the gospel, so he abandoned them. He became with the world. So setting yourself when your religion is that much different from the world, that's what you do. You're seeking excitement, you're seeking carnal pleasures, and you can find a church that will encourage that. Joel Osteen often says, we don't draw the line at anybody. If you're a homosexual, if you're a lesbian, come on in, we'll accept you just like you are. And when you stop and think about it, that religion is just the world. You can find all that at Walmart, but you can't find God there. And so we have to make sure that we don't sell ourselves for carnal pleasure, even when it has a facade of religion on it. Well, he began to blame others for his problems, and he did something that was pretty bad. He was leading others into idolatry, and there were two prophets that came in his life. One was Elijah, and one was Micaiah. And at this time, Judah under Jehoshaphat and Israel under Ahab was going to go to war with Syria. And they said, well, let's ask a prophet. But Ahab said, I don't like Micaiah. He always tells me things I don't like. I've been there. I know that feeling. Every preacher has felt that at one time or another. People want to be soothed. And Paul even told to Timothy about the time will come when they'll have itching ears and they'll find teachers who will tell them what they want to hear. And this was the way Ahab was. He and Jehoshaphat were going to go to war, but I want this prophet to tell me we're going to win. And the prophet said, now if you go to war, the dogs are going to lick your blood off your chariot because you'll lose. He said, see there, I told you he didn't like me. I told you he was always giving me bad news. Well, they ignored him and went on to war. And Ahab was killed. That's sort of getting ahead of the story. And when they brought the chariot back to town to clean it, the dogs licked the blood out of the chariot and off the floor. And so the prophet told the truth, but he didn't want that to be understood. Now, Elijah was another prophet. Elijah had what he was called a contest at Mount Carmel. And he told Ahab, you bring all the prophets of Baal. You bring all these prophets and we're going to have a contest. And the God who answers by fire should be the God of Israel. It was very dramatic. So Elijah and the prophets of Baal there were many, many more than just Elijah. And they were to have a sacrifice and call down fire from heaven to accept the sacrifice. And the prophets of Baal, they began to scream aloud and cut themselves as they were wont to do and to try to get their God to light the sacrifice, and it never did happen. So Ezekiel came up. He said, soak it all with water. Soak it all with water. And they did. and water ran down and all around it, and then he spoke quietly to God. And God sent down the fire that burned up not only the sacrifice, but even the water, proving who God was. And they killed a lot of the prophets, idolaters of Baal, the false prophets. They killed a lot of those. And then Jezebel, "I'm going to get you." Have you ever had anybody say that to you in a bad way? Had a fellow tell me one time, "You just watch your back. I'll get you." That's because I stood against his sinful lifestyle. And he was exposed and didn't like it. To this day, he hates me. But that's all right. My conscience is clear, and I'll stand before God knowing who told the truth. But Elijah had to flee because Jezebel was after him. And then something happened. Well, Ahab, when he saw Elijah, he called him the troubler of Israel. "You're the troubler in Israel." And Elijah said, "No, you're the troubler in Israel." He laid the blame where it should have been. And he blames Elijah for the trouble, but he blamed others rather than himself. He was the one that was really doing all the bad stuff. And when you make bad choices, then blame somebody else. That's what happens in today's political world. I've seen it over and over again. But it can happen among us that something goes wrong and I blame somebody else rather than take the responsibility for myself. And when the fruit of it comes out, blame someone else. And that's what Ahab was doing. But he did what he wanted to do. There was a man in a neighborhood with Ahab named Naboth. And Naboth had a beautiful vineyard. And Ahab said, "I want that. I want that." And Naboth said, "No, this is my inheritance. And we don't want to let the inhabitants, the natural inhabitants of the land switch from other places. In fact, they were to keep their tribal lines so each tribe would be identified." And Ahab didn't care about that, but Naboth did. He said, "No, I can't sell you that." And he said, "Well, I'll pay you for it and I'll buy you another one." And Naboth said, "No, I just can't violate my inheritance." So what do you think Ahab did? Have you read the story? He began to pout. He went home and he couldn't eat and he couldn't sleep because he couldn't get his toy. And then came Jezebel. And she said, "You're the king. You can do what you want to do. Get up and eat. And go take that vineyard. I'll do it for you." And so she devised a plan. And you have to watch sometime. You really don't know when the Bible says pride goes before a fall. In this instance, it wasn't Naboth's fault. But Jezebel devised a plan where she was going to honor Naboth and give him credit for being such a good man. But then she had two scumbags, I'll call them. They were scoundrels. And when he was being honored, they stood up and said, "I heard him curse God. You need to stone him to death." And that's what they did. They took him outside the city and stoned him to death. And Ahab felt so good, and he went over to the vineyard. "This is mine." And there was Elijah. And he said, "You've come to take possession?" Yeah, he came to take possession. Elijah said, "You're going to die. And the dogs are going to lick your blood." Of course, that's what happened to Jezebel later on, as you get to the rest of the story. It was really interesting how when the army finally came in and took over the palace, she was standing in a window. And they said, "Throw her down." And she had already been told, "The dogs are going to lick your blood." And so people went up and threw her down. And I saw a joke one time about that. Said they threw her down three times. It only took once. And she splattered. And the dogs came and licked her blood. And that's a terrible ending. But it's a fitting ending for two that united to work evil. And then Elijah went with Jehoshaphat out to battle the Syrians, and he got killed. And he was sort of like a coward. And if you read the story, he had Jehoshaphat dress up like a king, but he put on just ordinary clothing so they wouldn't know that he was king. So when they came to fight, they were looking, they had been ordered, look for the king and kill the king. Well, they started after Jehoshaphat, but when they saw it was him, they left him alone. But a stray arrow pierced the armor of Ahab and wounded him, and he died. Then they went back into town, and the dogs licked his blood. Can I say that that's a fitting end for people who united to do evil? And can I say that God strike me dead before I do something like that? And I mean it. I'd rather die than get caught in a situation like that. Now then, of course, the lesson is for you. How much would it take for you to sell yourself? Would it be a particular kind of job that pays so much that you'll do anything? You know, it's really hard these days for teenagers to get a job. No matter where you go, there's liquor. And people want beer and wine and alcohol. And I don't think a young Christian ought to get involved in that kind of a job. So that limits many times what a Christian can do. But there's a consequence to what we do. And Ahab was the one. I'll just close it here, although I could go on. But this is just a historical study that Romans chapter 15 verse 4 says that we need to be reminded of, that not to do the same thing. And so look at your marriage. Look at yourself. And ask the question, what is my price? I mentioned in class Fox's Book of Martyrs. And there was no price for them.